And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is Cinco de Mayo, May 5th. Since our illustrious leaders in this area, saying Mexican. In this particular case, Cinco de Mayo, of course, is celebrating a Mexican victory over the Spanish, over the French Foreign Legion, which came. Okay, as I say, it's May 5th, 125th day of the year. 240 days remain till the year's over with. 553, the Second Council of Constantinople begins. 1215, rebel barons renounce their allegiance to King John of England, part of a chain of events leading to the signing of the Magna Carta. The problem is, thought he really was. John, if I'm not mistaken, was the brother of Richard Lionhearted, and ruled in his place while Richard was in the Holy Land, carrying out God's plan for the subjugation of a new area. 1260, Kublai Khan became the ruler of the Mongol Empire. 1494, in his second voyage to the New World, Columbus sights Jamaica, landing at Discovery Bay and declares Jamaica the property of the Spanish crown. Daimyo, or Lord Shimazu Tadasuni of the Satsuma Domain in southern Kyushu, Japan, completes a successful invasion of the Ryukyu Kingdom in Okinawa. 1640, King Charles I of England dissolves the Short Parliament. 1654, Cromwell's Act of Grace, aimed at reconciliation of the Scots, is proclaimed in Edinburgh. Excuse me. Still got the, whatever this creeping crud is. 1762, Russia and Prussia signed the Treaty of St. Petersburg. 1789, in France, the Estates General convenes for the first time since 1614. 1809, Mary Keyes becomes the first woman awarded a U.S. patent. It was a technique for weaving straw with silk and thread. 1821, Emperor Napoleon dies in exile on the island of St. Helena in the South Atlantic Ocean. Now, there's two caveats to that story. The first is, the individual who died on St. Helena turns out to have been poisoned with arsenic. A lock of hair was examined many, many years later, and was determined to have high levels of arsenic. Number two, there is evidence that the man who died in St. Helena was actually one of Napoleon's doubles. Napoleon himself escaped and was eventually shot in the courtyard of the castle where his son was dying of a disease. He was shot by a sentry. 1821, the first edition of the Manchester Guardian, now known as the Guardian, is published. The 1835, the first railway in continental Europe opens between Brussels and Michelin. 1862, Cinco de Mayo, troops led by Ignacio Zaragoza halt the French invasion in the Battle of Puebla in Mexico. During the American Civil War, the French invaded Mexico. There's nothing we could do about it at the time. And they appointed an emperor, Maximilian, who I think was Austrian. And he was eventually shot by a firing squad while in the process of escaping the country. His military support, the French Foreign Legion, wasn't quite up to the job of protecting him. His treasure, and it was vast, was loaded onto carts and sent north under loyal soldiers who fell in with a group of Confederates who, the war is over by that time, and they eventually killed the guards, buried the treasure, and I've seen pieces of it. Carlotta's necklace was in a pawn shop in Juarez for a long, long time. 1864, American Civil War, Battle of the Wilderness begins in Spotsylvania County. 1865, American Civil War, Confederate government was declared dissolved at Washington, Georgia. Jefferson Davis tried to escape to Cuba to carry out the war, but he got captured. 1866, Memorial Day is first celebrated in the U.S. at Waterloo, New York. 1977, American Indian Wars. Sitting Bull. He leads his band of Lakota Sioux into Canada, avoid harassment by the U.S. Army under Colonel Nelson Miles. It was Sitting Bull who was the brains behind the Little Bighorn Massacre, though Crazy Horse actually led the troops. Sitting Bull wasn't the chief, he was the medicine man, the shaman. 1886, workers marching for the 8-hour day in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, were shot at by Wisconsin National Guardsmen in what became known as the Bayview Massacre. 1891, Music Hall, New York City, later known as Carnegie Hall, has its grand opening and the first public performance with Tchaikovsky as the guest conductor. 1904, pitching against Philadelphia Athletics at the Huntington Avenue Ground, Cy Young of the Boston Americans throws the first perfect game in the modern era of baseball. 1905, the trial in the Stratton Brothers case begins in London. It's the first time fingerprint evidence is used to gain a conviction for murder. Now, the Stratton Brothers case, that's Alfred Edward Stratton and his brother, Albert Ernest Stratton, were executed at 9 a.m. May 23rd, 1905 at H.M. Prison, Wandsworth. The case was also known as the Mass Murders due to the black stocking top mass that had been left at the scene of the crime. Also the Deptford Murders due to the location, or the Farrer Murders, the last name of the victims. One of the earliest convictions using forensic science. On Monday, the 27th of March, 1905, William Jones went to Chapman's Oil and Color Shop at 34 Deptford High Street, where he worked. When he got to the shop, he found it closed and shuttered, which was unusual. The manager of the shop, Thomas Farrow, who was 71, lived with his wife, Anne, who was 65, in the flat above the shop, and he was in the habit of having the shop closed at such a late hour. Since he couldn't get the door open, he tried knocking, but since he didn't get a response, he peeked through a window and saw there were chairs knocked over. He was alarmed at what he saw, so he ran for help and found Lewis Kidman, a local resident, worked in a nearby store, and the two men forced their way into the shop. Shortly after forcing their way in, they found the body of Mr. Farrell on the ground dead. Miss Farrell was barely alive, but unconscious in the couple's bed. Both bore signs of having been repeatedly beaten. A doctor was called, as were the police, and Miss Farrell was taken to the hospital. Now, despite the disarray in the shop itself, the police didn't find any signs of forced entry. The motive, of course, was robbery. And it was a brilliantly carried out crime. The only thing that was found was a greasy thumbprint on the cash box. And that thumbprint turned out to be the evidence that convicted the Stratton brothers. The police, unfortunately, forensic science was not at the forefront of criminal justice at that time. But at least this marked the beginning. 1920, authorities arrest Nicola Sacco and Bartolomeo Vanzetti for alleged robbery and murder. 1930, that became a very famous case, by the way. The 1930 Bago earthquake, the former of two major earthquakes in southern Burma, killed as many as 7,000 in Yangon and Bago. 1936, Italian troops occupy Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. 1940, World War II, Norwegian campaign. Norwegian squads in Hegra Fortress and Vinje capitulate to German forces after all of the Norwegian forces in southern Norway had laid down their arms. Excuse me. 1941, Emperor Haile Selassie returns to Addis Ababa. The country commemorates that day as Liberation Day or Patriots' Victory Day. The Ethiopians, with spears on horseback for the most part, defeated the Italian army. The Germans actually had to come in and support the Italians. 1945, World War II. The Prague Uprising begins as an attempt by the Czech resistance to free the city from German occupation. Also in 45, World War II, a Fugo balloon bomb launched by the Japanese Army kills six people near Bly, Oregon. Fugo balloons were balloons with incendiary devices that were launched from Japan to be picked up by the Gulf Stream and carried to the western U.S. They hoped to cause major disruption. It didn't. 1945, World War II, Battle of Castle Eter. Only a battle which American and German troops fought cooperatively. It's one I hadn't heard of. The troops of the 23rd Tank Battalion of the 12th Armored Division of the 21st Corps, led by Captain John C. Jack Lee, and a number of Wehrmacht soldiers led by Major Joseph Sepp Gangl, SF Hauptsturmfuhrer Kurt Siegfried Schrader, and recently freed French prisoners of war, defended Castle Eder against an attacking force from the 17th SS Panzer Grenadier Division until relieved by the 142nd Infantry Regiment of the 36th Division of the 21st Corps. Among the French prisoners of war that helped defend the castle were former prime ministers, generals, a tennis star, and Charles de Gaulle's sister. It's one of two known times during the war in which Americans and Germans fought side by side. The other one being Operation Cowboy. It's been called the strangest battle of World War II. It took place in Austria. I've also said we live in a very strange world. 1946, International Military Tribunal for the Far East begins in Tokyo. 28 Japanese military and government officials accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity. 1955, the General Treaty by which France, Britain, and the U.S. recognize the sovereignty of West Germany comes into effect. 1961, Alan Shepard becomes the first American to travel into outer space on a suborbital flight. 1964, the Council of Europe declares May 5th, Europe Day. 1972, Alitalia Flight 112 crashes onto Mount Longa near Palermo, Sicily, kills all 115 on board, making it the deadliest single aircraft disaster in Italy. 1973, Secretariat wins the 1973 Kentucky Derby in 1 minute 59 and 2/5 seconds. That's an as yet unbeaten record by any other horse. 1980, Operation Nimrod. The British Special Air Service storms the Iranian embassy in London after a six-day siege. 1981, Bobby Sands dies in a Lancaster prison hospital after 66 days of hunger striking. He was 27 years old. 1985, Ronald Reagan visits a military cemetery at Bitburg and decided the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp where he makes a speech. 1987, Iran-Contra started congressional televised hearings in the U.S. 1991, a riot breaks out at the Mount Pleasant section of Washington, D.C. after police shoot a Salvadorian man. 'A would-be activist of my acquaintance once said, no event that can spark a riot should be overlooked. 1994, the signing of the Bishkek Protocol between Armenia and Azerbaijan effectively freezes the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict. 1994, American teenager Michael Fay is caned in Singapore for theft and vandalism. 2006, the government of Sudan signs an accord with the Sudan Liberation Army. 2007, Kenya Airways Flight 507 crashes after takeoff from Douala International Airport in Douala, Cameroon. Kills all 114 aboard. It's the deadliest aircraft disaster in Cameroon. 2010, mass protests in Greece erupt in response to austerity measures imposed by the government as a result of the Greek government debt crisis. And they did have quite a crisis. Well, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history, holidays, observances. It's Children's Day in Japan and South Korea. Christian Feast Day, Angelus of Jerusalem, Aventinus of Tours, Blessed Edmund Ignacio Rice, Frederick the Wise in our Lutheran Church and the Missouri Synod, Goddard of Hildesheim, Hilary of Arles, Judah of Kumsi, Stanislaw Kazimierzki, Cinco de Mayo in New Mexico and in the U.S., Constitution Day in Kazakhstan, Europe Day in the Council of Europe, Feast of Al-Qadir or St. George in the Palestinian lands, Indian Arrival Day in Guyana, International Midwives Day internationally, in Denmark and the Netherlands, Liberation Day. Lusophone Culture Day in the Community of Portuguese Language Countries. World Portuguese Language Day internationally. We don't have a World English Day. That's interesting. Martyrs Day in Albania. Patriots Victory Day in Ethiopia. Revenge of the Fifth. I have no idea what that one is. Senior Citizens Day in Palau. Tango no Siku in Japan. Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Awareness Day in Canada and the U.S. Excuse me. Now let's see what else we have. And I have been asked to announce that there is What have I been asked to announce? Too many individuals are coming into the neighborhood. It's believed to be a possible attempt at home invasion. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Okay. In 553, we've got the Second Council of Constantinople. That's the Fifth Ecumenical Council. I got a request to explain who Kublai Khan was, who became ruler of the Mongol Empire. He was the grandson of Chinggis Khan. 1430, the Jews are expelled from Speyer, Germany. 1646, King Charles I surrenders in Scotland. 1726, Marie de Camargo, who was 16 at the time, premieres at the Opera of Paris. 1778, George Washington appoints Friedrich Wilhelm von Steuben, Inspector General of the Continental Army. 1792, Jean-Baptiste Joseph de Lambre, commissioned to measure the meridian between Dunkerque to Rodez to calculate the accurate length of the meter. He was a mathematician and an astronomer. 1814, the British attack Fort Ontario in Oswego, New York. 1816, the American Bible Society is organized in New York. 1842, a citywide fire burns over 100 hours in Hamburg, Germany. 1847, the American Medical Association is organized in Philadelphia. 1854, British Commodore James Plumbridge attacks Finnish settlements in the Gulf of Bothnia, kills civilians, and destroys British-owned goods. 1855, New York City regains Castle Clinton to be used for immigration. 1861, Alexandria, Virginia, the Confederate troops abandon the city. 1863, Irish boxer Joe Coburn KOs American Mike McCool in the 67th round in his first defense of the heavyweight championship of America in Charlestown, Maryland. 1864, a battle between Confederate and Union ships at the mouth of the Roanoke. 1864, the campaign in northern Georgia, Chattanooga to Atlanta. 1870, the British and the Foreign Society for Improving the Embossed Literature for the Blind adopts Braille as the best format for blind people. 1881, anti-Jewish rioting in Kiev, Ukraine. 1882, the Billboard begins weekly publication. 1905, Robert Abbott published the first issue of the newspaper Chicago Defender. 1908, the Great White Fleet arrives in San Francisco. They left Virginia on December 16, 1907. For a 2-year voyage, literally around the world. It was called the Great White Fleet because the ships were all painted white. And in 1912, the Soviet Communist Party newspaper Pravda begins publishing. 1917, Eugene Bullard gains his pilot's license from the Aero Club de France and becomes the first African-American military pilot. He flew in the French Air Service. 1921, Chanel No. 5 was released by fashion designer Coco Chanel, who, as everyone knows, was a Nazi collaborator. 1925, Dayton teacher John Scopes is arrested for teaching evolution in Tennessee, which gave rise to the Scopes Monkey Trial, which became very famous in the legal world. Well, I think on that note, we have finished our little history segment. Now, we've been talking about a lot of, well, there we go. Strange things. We've been talking about the Lewis, Meriwether Lewis murder, which history says may have been suicide, may have been murder. But if it was suicide, it was a very determined case because he shot himself twice. Once a shot took out part of his skull. And if that wasn't enough, then he stabbed himself a number of times. I don't know how else you could say it. The sad thing about the all the stories of this time period is we don't know the truth. Because, of course, at that point in time, we didn't have all the forensics that we have now, number one. And number two, the government got involved. A lot of, shall we say, political reasons for keeping it very quiet about, there were stories that he was losing it. There are other stories that he was a drunk. But having done several days on Lewis and Clark, we're gonna talk about the paranormal in America for this show. I've got a story from a person said when they were young, they lived in a trailer in the back of a trailer park. It's called the Diamond Estates, and it was in Anchorage, Alaska, off of Diamond and Arctic. Their backyard was actually the woods, and that's where the kids spent the majority of the time. When one in the woods, a lot of time reading in the room or laying on the couch, discovering the worlds of fantasy or science fiction and books. Concentration in Tolkien and Brian Jacques and many others. But sometimes reality is just as bizarre as the most bizarre stories you could read. Now, kid had a stepfather. And of course, the stepfather moved into the trailer. And he started talking almost immediately about strange dreams he was having involving members of the family being possessed. He even had dreams about himself being possessed. Now, the only person ever talked about being possessed in those dreams was the person that was telling the story. And the stepfather would wake up every morning with some new tale of horror and fear to tell him all about at breakfast. And none of the stories in his dreams ever made anybody suspect anything was off until later. But this pattern went on for several years. And one Friday evening, the mother and stepfather had gone out for the night, and the person telling the story is watching the brother and sister. And for the most part, the evening was uneventful. Siblings were surprisingly well behaved, and they went to bed fairly early. And the narrator laid on the couch watching TV without really paying any attention to it. Mostly daydreaming about adventures awaiting them in the woods the next day. And of course, waiting for the weekend with great anticipation. Now, most Saturday mornings, it was their custom to sleep in a little late and spend all day in the woods, just having a good time. And suddenly, the narrator was struck with a sensation wasn't really familiar with at that point in life, but later become fully acquainted with. Feelings of hair on the back of the neck and arms stand up. Skin felt like ants were crawling on it, and feelings were bizarre and a little scary. Had the strongest feeling somebody was watching her, and her writer surreptitiously looked around to see who it might be and didn't see anything at first, but then attention was directed to a spot near the ceiling and just along the edge of the wall dividing the living room and the kitchen. They could make out somebody standing there with their hand gripping the wall and their face aimed directly at the narrator. They were watching. And as the narrator's eyes made contact with theirs, the head and hand disappeared back around the corner and heard the sounds of a large man running down the hall. Down the hall toward the rooms where the siblings were sleeping. So the narrator grabbed a baseball bat and ran down the hall. Got near that long dark hallway, became cautious, realizing that to rush into danger might mean wouldn't be able to protect the brother and sister. At that point, realized the house was still and silent and dark. Now, the narrator related being afraid, but was determined not to abandon the siblings. Cut on the light switch, and the ensuing illumination, of course, reduced the fear, but it was still there. I mean, the stranger was so much bigger. Could easily have heard him. Walked down the hallway past the brother's room, since the pounding steps sounded like going all the way to the end of the hall to the sister's room. And that door was closed. The house was still quiet and calm. And turned the knob and stepped into the sister's dark room. Now, the room was sparsely furnished. A bed, a desk, nightstand, closet. She was sleeping soundly, utterly undisturbed. Now, the closet had no door and contained almost nothing. A few dresses and some shirts. Could see the back of the closet from a few steps inside the door, and there was nothing there, but cut on the light anyway. Checked out the closet. Nothing there. Then walked over to the window and looked at it. It was unbroken, closed, and locked. Everything was secure. Looked around the room and saw everything appeared normal. Began to think something was strange, but still mostly in the defensive mode. So I turned out the light and left the room. Walked back up the hall to the parents' room and turned the doorknob and discovered it was locked. Door wouldn't budge. Next door up was the narrator's and his brother's, and fully expected to find an intruder there. Felt the knob and listened at the door, and everything seemed quiet and normal. Heard no sound on the other side. Turned the knob, shoved the door open. Brother was sleeping in his bed, and nobody jumped out to grab him. Looked around the room, didn't see anything out of the ordinary. Action figures that were on display were still carefully arranged. The desk was closed, as were the closet doors. Took a tighter grip on the bat and walked toward the closet. Their closet had doors. Turned on the light, and brother didn't stir when the lights came on. Kept sleeping peacefully. Walked over back to the closet and stepped closer and placed a hand on the closet door, feeling a little bit of nervousness. Flung open the door and saw all the jackets hanging with huge gaps between them. See the wall and the floor underneath, nobody was hiding. Walked over to the other side of the closet, opened the door, and nothing leaped out and attacked. Didn't see an intruder. Checked the window, and it was as locked as the sister's had been. It was closed and locked and unmolested. Looked around the room again, didn't see anything out of the ordinary. No one had been there but he and his brother. Ran from the room, checked all the windows and doors in the house, and he knew somebody had invaded the house, but then vanished. Couldn't figure it out. Something unexplainable had been in the house that terrified him. Woke his brother and sister up, made sure they weren't playing a prank, and he could tell by how difficult it was to wake him up. It hadn't been then. Both denied being involved in a prank. And he left them, and they went back to sleep. And he sat on the couch and waited for the parents. Well, when the parents got home, they didn't believe him. They ridiculed him, said he'd been dreaming, laughed it off. He got over being afraid, but he never forgot. And his stepfather's nightmares continued. A few months later, the stepfather woke up and said the dreams hadn't come the night before. He'd slept through the night and felt wonderful. That night, his sister had, the narrator's sister and a friend spent the night, and next morning he again didn't have any nightmares or demonic possession. He dreamed, but he dreamt about normal things like flying and falling. After lunch, his sister's friend went to the bathroom while they were all still sitting at the table. And they heard her turn the light on, and there was a pause and a terrible scream. She came scrambling backward out of the bathroom, and her eyes were huge, and all the blood had left her face and arms. She was babbling, and her eyes were rolling in her sockets, and her hands were wound up in the front of her shirt. Well, the parents got it, took charge of her and tried to calm her down. She slowly eased back from the edge of full-on panic, and the narrator walked into the bathroom, looked around. Didn't see anything out of ordinary. Sat on the edge of the tub, ran his hands along the inside, and it was dry. And as he walked out of the bathroom, he heard the friend say that there had been a girl in the bathroom. She was still somewhat panicky, and her eyes were still huge and staring, but she'd calmed down enough to relate what she'd seen. She said a little girl who appeared to be between 4 and 7 had been lying in the tub covered with water and reached out and tried to touch her. The girl had been wearing an elaborate yellow dress and her hair had been done up as if for a ball. At that point, she screamed and backed out of the bathroom. But when the narrator went back to the bathroom, the tub was still dry. And after that, the stepfather never had another dream of somebody being possessed the rest of the time they lived in that trailer. This is merely the beginning of some of the many supernatural things that the narrator had seen or felt or been touched by while growing up in Anchorage, Alaska, which apparently is quite a bizarre place. Well, this next individual, always been a bit sensitive to the paranormal, as many of us are. The family had known this, but they refused to believe him when he tell them about the entity he had named John. It was the name he had given to their friendly house ghost, or one of them. Family liked to ignore his existence merely because they were terrified of the idea that somebody in the house they can't see. Now, the narrator couldn't see John either, but knew he was there. knew by paying attention to small things, to the surroundings and the strange occurrences that happen every so often. And he noticed John was present when doors started to open and close on their own. Mainly happened to the bedroom door where the narrator stayed. And he had attempted to debunk this as evidence by putting a doorstop in front of it. Wanted to make sure it wasn't caused by the air conditioner or other doors opening and closing. But in spite of that, it would open and close by itself. He also likes to turn the TVs on and off. He knows how to change the stations on Pandora if he didn't like the music that's being played. And these are all subtle occurrences that happen from time to time. There are other things that happen that, in spite of himself, the narrator has to acknowledge. Every now and then, footsteps can be heard going up and down the hallway while everybody else is sound asleep. The narrator said he'd gotten up and checked many times to make sure it wasn't anybody in the family. And sometimes a very low, disembodied voice can be heard. It's a male voice, and it whispers different phrases and words, like hello and thank you and wait and come here and Cindy and Mom and Marissa. And the narrator was especially happy that the voice had learned to say the narrator's name. One night, the narrator was very tired and didn't feel like getting up to cut off the light. So jokingly, not really expecting anything to happen, said, "Please turn off the light, John. I'm too tired to get up right now." And at that moment, the light switch went down and the light went off. Now this would rightfully scare most people, but the narrator thought it was great. Able to interact with the paranormal. And she said thank you before she went to sleep. And it seems the more she mentions or tries to communicate with John, the more active he becomes. And he is, for his part, learning to do more things. Recently learned how to touch people. Realized this when she was lying down and watching something on Netflix. Felt someone place a hand on her upper back. Turned around and expected to see her mother standing there, but there was nobody present. She started and went back to watching the show. And that had happened a few more times since then, and she doesn't really mind it. Trying to convince the family to let her conduct a small paranormal investigation, but they refused to allow it to happen. The mother claims to be inviting evil into the house. Well, the interestingly enough, if you have any of the voice-activated electronics, you can create the same sensation. Let's talk about a state I'm somewhat familiar with, Arkansas, home of the Clintons. The Arkansas is an interesting state by a long shot. My great uncle bought several hundred acres of land when he could buy it for what it would grow. And since it grew a great crop of weeds every year, he got it for $50 an acre. And then discovered it was sitting on the lake of oil. Now, 10, 15 years ago, a lady and her kids moved to Arkansas and quickly found themselves on the verge of being homeless. And in, as if the answer to a prayer, she stumbled across an abandoned house. Found the owner of the house and got permission for she and her children to move in. A number of people told her the stories of ghosts in the house. But having a roof over the heads of her and her children trumped any fear she might have had of ghosts. They lived there for over a month before she could have a hot water heater put in. We were talking about the paranormal in Arkansas. I'm just stop for a moment to deal with a call I had to take. An individual telling the story and her kids moved to Arkansas. She said it was a dark period in her life, and she more or less dropped the ball. She was depressed, not attending to her household chores. Moved into an abandoned house. The only thing she could find. Put a roof over her kid's head. And she said often the house was messy and unkept. And that's when she noticed weird things would happen. One night during a thunderstorm, their landline telephone literally blew up and flew across the room. They thought lightning hit the line and came into the house, but nothing else got affected. The TV and the computer were both on at the time, but only with the phone. New light bulbs would often blow out. Dishes would fall off the countertops and break, even though there was nobody in the kitchen. And it didn't take more than 2 months before the brand new water heater broke. Somehow she got the impression this was due to the displeasure of the ghost that they could feel and hear, who didn't care for her housekeeping habits. Excuse me, when she began to keep up the house again, the atmosphere of the house lightened up. And this went on for 3 or 4 months, but due to the ups and downs of divorce and relocating over 700 miles away from her home and family, when the kids left to visit their father for the summer, she went back into her depression and ignored housekeeping once again. And as soon as the house became a mess, the second hot water heater blew up. Pipes burst. Having to spend money to repair things kind of snapped her back into reality, and she straightened up and flew right. And she could feel the difference in the atmosphere of the house all once again. She began to talk to the ghost she could feel in the house. She thought it was a woman. One day she's in the kitchen doing the dishes and caught something moving out of the corner of her eye. And she turned her head to see what had got her attention. And walking from the bathroom through the back of the kitchen toward the living room was the full body apparition of a man dressed in a 3-piece gray flannel suit with a white shirt, dark tie, wearing an old-fashioned gray hat with a black hat band. Rather stern looking and tall and thin with short dark hair. She said the clothing was out of the 30s or 40s. He didn't look at her or even acknowledge her. He had a very somber expression on his face. She watched him take 2 or 3 steps before he just vanished. And the wall behind him was different too, and it was like the items she had against the wall weren't just not there. He walked right through a large bird cage, but where he stood, the cage wasn't. Difficult to describe the difference in the wall and the items as the apparition only lasted a short time and she was focused on the man himself rather than his surroundings. So for about 30 seconds, she was looking at another person in her house. Middle of the day and the kitchen was bright and sunny and she remembered thinking it was far too hot for anybody to be dressed in such a suit. Didn't feel scared by his presence but felt as though he was in some way letting her see him to tell her that what he expected, and insisted upon the house being kept in a tidy condition. And although she continued to hear things, and I hadn't seen the move in the home when the kids swore they hadn't touched anything, if she left any type of mess when she went to bed or to work, she never saw anyone again. She left the sink load of dirty dishes overnight. Sometimes she'd wake up in the middle of the night, something broken on the kitchen floor, even when she was the only person in the house. Whenever the man she was dating would spend the night, things would happen. It was almost like they disapproved of a single mother in general, but really disapproved of a single mother dating intimately. Damn. Often things on the kitchen or bathroom shelves would be on the floor in the morning. She believed an older couple from a more traditional time had occupied the house and had expressed themselves with disapproval if she didn't act the way they thought she should. And she didn't think they approved of her, but always had the impression of feeling they cared about the children. Nothing that belonged to the children was ever moved or broken. She tried to discover who the man could have been, but never did figure it out, and she could never discover if anybody had died in the house or on the property. She never did see the woman, though she was very much aware of her being there. The feeling she had was she was not as harsh or disapproving as the man. And while she did have pet dogs at the time, she did have a cat. Many times the items that had gone from a shelf to the floor couldn't have been reached by the dogs. And she had no history of mental illness, wasn't taking drugs, either legal or illegal. And she never experienced hallucinations. But she has, over the years, been sensitive to aspects of the supernatural. Now, we got a story that came out of California. And the young lady tells the story, is 33, and looks back at her childhood and remembers the day that something scared her so bad she'll never forget it. She was 12 at the time and lived in Ben Lomond, California. Mother did warehouse work and the father was a computer engineer. It's about 8:30 in the morning. She planned to ride her bike to school instead of walking. They live close to the school up in the mountains, so she's able to get there by herself. As she rode along, she passed a car that was abandoned. Didn't think much about it at the time because she's focused on getting to school, although it crossed her mind if she slowed down to look inside and saw her cat with its head missing lying on the front seat. Which blew her mind completely, freaked her out. Started screaming for help. She was so terrified she didn't know what to do. So she got on her bike and went back home in a panic, called her mother at work to tell her what she had seen. She told her to stay home and wait for her. And she's waiting and panicking and crying and went outside and looked down the driveway to see if her mother had pulled in. And then blinked her eyes and saw her cat on the front porch walking toward her. She picked up the cat and the cat was totally fine. So she couldn't figure out why she had seen what she had seen on the way to school. And her mother arrived in a panic and total fear for the child's life, and she explained what happened. She said, "I just imagined things." She said, "I'm telling you the truth, so let me take you there and show you what I saw." Got in the car and drove to the place where she had seen the car parked. It was a white Cadillac that had been abandoned. And the car is still there. And her mother walked up to the car and looked in, saw a woman lying on the front seat. Daughter didn't know what happened to her, but she assumed it was terrible because the mother was screaming and running toward her to get out of there. When she got in the car, faced as white as a ghost, she could hardly talk. Daughter was crying and the mother was crying and mother was tearing down the street trying to get help. Arrived at the police station, made their report, and were told to stay there. Well, when they got to where the car had been parked, that both the mother and the daughter had seen, it wasn't there. So what did they see? Where did it go? Both of them knew it wasn't a dream. Both will never forget that day, but they now know it was paranormal, had to have been. Mother, of course, pretends nothing happened. The daughter is absolutely positive it's paranormal. Well, I've got a conference call coming in, so we're going to leave the show a little early today. So until tomorrow at this time, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.